On Sunday, February 5th at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl presents composer, vocalist, and arranger Lisa Fisher. Lisa Fisher was featured in the Oscar award-winning 20 Feet from Stardom. Join us as we discuss Lisa Fisher's career and her latest project with the band Grand Baton. That's Sunday, February 5th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. Listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones. Our guest for this evening is vocalist, composer, arranger, Lisa Fisher. Lisa Fisher will be at the Blue Note from February 14th through the 19th. And Lisa Fisher was featured in the Oscar award-winning 20 Feet from Stardom. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl starts now.
Steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl.
Billy Childs.
Let's talk about Map to the Treasure, Reimagining Laura Nero. The title cut, as a matter of fact, Map to the Treasure, features Lisa Fisher.
Yeah.
Who is an amazing vocalist.
she is.
They all are. All of the vocalists on here are, but she's just so soul-filled.
Yeah, she's extraordinary.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hi, my name's Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with
Lisa Fisher.
Thank you so much, Lisa Fisher, for joining Sugar in My Bowl. I appreciate your being
here. Oh, I'm thankful to be here, so thank you for having me.
First off, I want to send you delayed congratulations on 20 Feet from Stardom.
I will take that. I will take that. Thank you. I'm just thankful to be a part of it. It's so many beautiful souls. Their life is chronicled in it, and there's so many more stories to tell.
And I'm glad yours was included. It was really great to hear everyone spotlight. Oh, of course, you know, Mary Clayton was like,
oh yeah,
wow, amazing.
Yeah, she's such a beautiful soul too, because I had not met her all the years touring with the Stones. I started like 1988-89,
right?
And I've been hearing her voice all this time, you know, studying Give Me Shelter, and always wanted to meet her and had never had the opportunity until this film.
So how did it feel meeting her, doing this film, and pretty much being the go-to person on Give Me Shelter?
It was amazing meeting her. I actually met her at Sundance, and we were in the lobby, and I was so excited because I knew I'd get a chance to finally meet this wonderful woman that's been like in my skin all these years. I was so excited. I hugged her, kissed her in the mouth. I was just so happy to see her. And I just kept confessing my love to her. I was just like, I don't know how much I love you. And she was so gracious. And she reminded me of the mothers in my church. Just that beautiful, supportive, loving, wise energy, you know?
Wow.
She was wonderful. She's such a wonderful spirit. And just the lilt of the sound of her voice, it was like butter on biscuits for me. I was just like, yeah, I'm good. I'm so good right now.
Well, another person from the film, Darlene Love, did you get to meet face-to-face as well? Or? Oh, I guess you did. Yes, you did. Duh, you sang together.
I did.
Sometimes in our lives, we all have pain, we all have sorrow, but if we are wise, we know that there's always tomorrow. Lean on me. Thank you.
I actually met her through Luther Vandross because he just loved her voice, loved her as a human being. And whenever we would do sessions, you know, every once in a while he would have some different people come in because, you know, Luther was the go-to guy for sessions in New York and was a huge session singer prior to his success. And so, you know, meeting her in the studio was amazing. And she just, her laugh is just so beautiful, her energy, and she's also just so connected spiritually and is also really a wise and wonderful woman. I'm just so thankful to know her. Yeah,
that was definitely something she as well grew into, being wise and wonderful.
Yes, we all get there, hopefully, eventually.
Eventually. Now, one of the vocalists in the film had mentioned, I think it was a man who actually said it, one of the vocalists mentioned how people tend to sing the background vocals, not so much the lead when they're singing along with songs on the radio and what have you.
That's very true.
Yeah.
That's very true. There's something about the energy of more than one voice, the collective voice. And even as a child, I would listen to the radio or the 45 records that my parents would give me, and I was always taken with the background vocals. That to me was like community, communion. I would just spend hours and hours listening to these voices all together. And for me, it was the idea of dissecting them all and trying to figure out who was doing what, how many people were there. Are the voices singing similarly in unison? Are they doing some harmonies? Are they crisscrossing? Are they doing their own thing, but somehow or another together, they sound like one thought? You know, and so I would spend hours just listening and just being like a sponge, you know.
Oh. Well, I grew up with my sister and two brothers, and we did the same thing. You know, we sing, you know, with the radio. But what we do, we were left in the car. We would, as a game, we would just harmonize. We would just sing things.
What?
And find harmonies. And that was
wow,
our joy.
Oh, I love that. Love that.
So, did you have siblings?
Yeah, I have two.
Uh-huh.
I have two brothers. We're all a year apart. I'm the oldest.
Uh-huh.
And then I have one brother 1 year younger and another brother 2 years younger.
Did you sing with them?
Yeah, we kind of sang around the house as children do. You know? It was more comedic than anything.
Oh.
I'm sure my parents would have called it noise. You know?
Y'all stop making that noise. Stop making that racket.
Oh, you know, but we enjoyed it. We had fun. There's so much unspoken information in the vibration of sound that we would just exchange it, not even knowing what we were exchanging. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be joyful. It could be like, oh Lord, I'm gonna get my butt beat, or it could be a million and one things. Yeah. I loved that exchange. I loved making sound with them. It was just the best.
We sort of made up songs too. And
what?
We made up songs to taglines on posters and, you know, billboards. And there was one about bread, and it said, it's got to be fresh. Just bake while you sleep. So that became a song.
What?
You
know, it's so interesting, Joyce, because as I'm listening to the sound of your voice, I mean, your speaking voice is just so beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm thinking to myself, I wonder if she sings as well. So that's really wild that you guys did that. You know what I mean? That's like a creative energy, and it's just so beautiful.
Yes, I sing in the alto section.
I love it. I always wanted to be an alto in high school.
Oh.
I always thought their singing parts were more intricate than the top soprano voices. They were like the glue that kind of held everything else together for me, the inner voices, you know.
And that's why I like it, because it seems so supportive.
Yes, exactly. It really is. Even the weight of the voice, you know, the weight of it is, it's just warm and beautiful. I just, altos rock.
Yeah. So are you a soprano? Is that?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you come to discover that that was what your voice was called?
Interesting. Probably in high school at Music and Art.
Oh, okay.
In elementary school when we were singing, it was a lot of unison singing, you know.
Right.
So it wasn't a whole lot of harmony stuff going on. Then in junior high school, started a little bit of understanding harmony a little bit through my music teacher, who was Dennis Moorman, who was the brother of Melba Moore.
Oh.
Yeah, he was an amazing human being and so giving. He would give me like free piano lessons.
Wow.
And was just so nurturing and so supportive. And so he helped me get into music and art. He helped me prepare for my audition for music and art. And so I think probably during that time, leaving junior high school, going into high school, was when I started realizing, oh, okay, so there's a soprano, alto, tenor, bass. Okay, cool. You know, and then once I got into music and art and we would get into these choral classes and you're in this huge choral room and, you know, all the sopranos are sitting together and the teacher, right. You know, the first day they tell you what voice part they think you are. They kind of put you in a section. But I think a lot of times what ends up happening is it is according to the need of the group. So let's say, for example, there's not enough altos, you might end up being a soprano who can sing alto,
yes.
And all of a sudden you're dubbed an alto, which,
yes.
You know, would have been fine with me. But yeah, no, my teacher was really good, and luckily, you know, it all balanced out. She had enough voices, and so we were all in the areas that we needed to be in. But I always would listen to, again, I go back to being a kid, I would always listen to what everybody else was singing,
right.
You know.
Were you a church attendee,
yes.
Growing up? Oh, okay.
Yes. My on my father's side, my paternal grandmother, she was the mother of the church at Evergreen, Church of God in Christ in Brooklyn.
Wow.
And so, you know, for me, as a young kid, just wanting to be busy, it was a wonderful opportunity to get out of the house, to be around other people, to understand the passion that my grandmother had for the church and for the community of the church. As far as the relationship with the Spirit,
mm-hmm.
I always feel that it's such a personal walk, such an individual and sacred walk, if you decide to take it, that I always, even before going to church, my maternal grandmother, my mother's mom, she was so into reading the Bible. She wasn't well enough to go to the church and have a church that I could remember, but I always remember her reading the Bible. And she always had difficulty pronouncing things. You know, she only had an education up to a particular point, so she would always ask me to help out. And so I would read the Bible with her. And so I always had these questions. So by the time I got into my paternal grandmother's church, they had this thing called Sunday school, you know, and they would have it during the week. And I was so happy and so excited. I was just like, wow, I get to ask all these questions. They were so sick of me asking questions.
Yeah.
About that. Because, you know, kids always come up with these questions that folks wish you never asked.
Right.
You know? So after a while, I kind of got it that I needed to work it out, pray on it. And,
right.
You know, just pray for the answers, really. You know, they did their best, but I think it's such an interesting walk,
yes.
You know.
Yes.
It's such an interesting walk, and so many things shape that walk. How you built, what your culture is, where you are in your life, what your issues are, you know, what it is you're trying to focus on. It's just so many things that color what kind of gets in. So, yeah.
As far as your musical development, was there anything that you could take from having been there?
Absolutely. There was so much joy in the vibration of sound and making the music. There was so much focus on practicing and getting it right, not only for yourself, not only for your church member mates and choir mates, but for the inner spirit within you.
Mm-hmm.
There was an awareness of taking your spiritual temperature and just seeing what felt right, what felt true. You could tell when someone was falling out in the middle of the aisle and it wasn't true.
Mm. Yes. know? So that also makes clear that your church was a spirited church.
Very much so. And, you know, when I first went, because, you know, when I first started to go, I wasn't really involved in all the extra activity with the choir and with the Sunday school. But when I first started going, some of it was a bit frightening because it is just so raw and it
yes.
is so honest.
Yes.
That sometimes for a child, it's a lot of information to try to assess and put in a place of peace within yourself, because your parents have protected you from a whole lot of whatever is ailing folks that do come. And after a while, after just witnessing the release is what I sort of kind of connected to, I realized this is a necessary release. It is also a necessary connection.
Right. The whole fellowship thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's personal. Mm-hmm. It really is personal. I say there are a lot of things we all do together, but we all are such individuals, you know.
Right.
And then it sort of led me to just kind of just question things and start to think, think and feel. Try to bridge those two things together.
I'm going to fast forward, and mm-hmm. then I'll come back. But I want to mention how, and your band, Grand Baton, you have scheduled dates at the Blue Note in February from the 14th through the 19th. That's Tuesday through Sunday.
Yes.
So now, seeing you at Brick Jazz Festival with the band, Grand Baton, mm-hmm. was incredible! I had a great time. Such
I'm
a great
so
time.
Thankful.
And
you.
Like I said, I'm fast forwarding because this being a music radio program, there is no Lisa Fisher and Grand Baton material to share with the listeners.
Right. Yeah.
But that's why people have to go to the Blue Note and catch you live. I mean, that's a whole other experience, just seeing the interplay live. But recordings, I still like recordings. Is there anything like that in the works?
It is, actually. Okay. We are, you know, this has been a wonderful journey for me, and I'm just, I wish there were another word for thankful or grateful, because my heart is just so full. I was lucky enough to meet J.C. Maillard, who's the musical director, and he's such a creative Zen spirit and such, how can I explain it? He's not afraid, you know, to play. He's not afraid to play around with ideas, stretching ideas, and I just love that about him. Mm-hmm. And then there's Terry Arpino, who's our drummer and percussionist, and he's just so full of joy. It's like I look at him and he beams. He's smiling and he beams and he's just so present. And then there's Aidan Carroll, who's the bassist. He plays like the upright bass and the electric bass. And he also plays keyboards and he's also his own artist. He sings.
Oh, wow.
It's just, you know, they're all just so talented. I'm just so thankful to make music with these particular spirits because of two things. Mainly because of the way that they listen and the way that they give. They're absolutely talented, but I think the combination of those three things makes this experience for me such an education for me. And so having to do these shows has been such a godsend because I feel like I'm on a different path as opposed to the path I used to be on when I had to do a record, right?
So
in the past it was like, find a songwriter, find a producer, da-da-da-da, and everything felt very lonely for me. And I was so used to being told what to do, what was needed. You're a session singer, and here's the job. And so I would always look at things, and not that that's a shackle, but there's the bullseye, and then around the bullseye is the area that I get to kind of play around with, right? And so now, having this journey with them, it's like the live experience for me, with singing with these guys, has been so creative, and I'm doing all these things that I didn't even know I could do, as far as just melodically speaking. There's a wandering that happens that I don't think about. It just happens in the moment, and it's not planned. A lot of it is not planned. And so just following that voice, that movement, that flow is really what I'm looking to capture when we all record together. And so we're in the process now of writing all this. I don't mean to be so long.
No, no, that's perfect. That's what we do around here, long form.
Thank God. Yes. So we're in the process of writing stuff together, and it's taken this long for me to get to a point where I could get out of my own way a bit and to be as fearless as they are. You know?
Yes.
And so it's been, they're a gift to me. They really are a gift to me. It's like every time we perform a song, it's always different. It's never exactly the same ever. And so because of the way they listen, that is exciting to me, you know?
Wonderful.
People come back to the show and they were like, oh, it's different than the last time you did it. And we're like, yeah, we never know where we're going to end up. And that's just so much fun.
So you've also answered my question as to whether it will be a live recording.
Well, you know, it's interesting. That's been a question in my mind, Joyce. I feel like we have gone in the studio like about a year or so ago and just recorded some of the things that we've actually done live. And there was something in it missing for me. There was a lot there that we don't do live that is beautiful, and the recordings are beautiful within itself, but it's not the bullseye that I'm looking to share right this minute. And so those things are just kind of sitting in wait until a later time. But I think moving forward, the question has been, how do you capture this feeling of abandonment and this communal exploration. And so we have some ideas and some people that are trying to help us. And so while we're in the process of doing that, I figured, let me just write from my heart and not judge what's coming out, because right. that is sort of the live experience for me as well, as not judging and just trying to be my best in that moment. It won't be perfect, but I will do my best to be my best in that moment. So yeah, that's sort of where we're going. And I'm not quite sure how that's going to be captured, if it's going to be live at a show, or if it'll be live in the studio, or if it's going to be, I'm not sure yet, but it's definitely starting to come into focus, you know.
Oh, nice.
We're still in the baby stages this year, actually. I'm hoping really before the year is out. I'm really praying.
Okay.
really praying. It would be nice, you know what I mean? Because people have been so patient and so loving and so supportive, you know, just coming out to support us in the shows. And, you know, it's wintertime, and sometimes people would just like to stay home, and they still come out anyway. It's a gift. It's a gift that they're there and that we get to mirror energy off each other. It really is.
Well, your start date at the Blue Note is February 14th. You're going to be at the Blue Note from February 14th through the 19th, and that's Tuesday through Sunday. The 14th is the commercially considered lover's holiday.
So, so no fighting, you people. You're right.
But if you're going to find the venue to be, listen to the voice, or be around the energies of love, I'm saying the Blue Note is the place to be. That's just me.
I love you. Thank you for that. It's all about love right about now. I'm just trying to find it in every nook and cranny, you know. It's the nourishment I need.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we could all use that more than ever.
Yes, Lord. Yes, Lord. You know, in a time when there are like a million and one questions, and times that by a billion fears, you know, we need to find the love as much as possible.
Hear, hear. I'm going to go back now from where I was. You're attending music and art. Once you left music and art, what'd you wind up doing with yourself?
I went to Queens College for two years.
Okay.
Was it 2 years or two semesters?
Good
Lord. You know, when you get to that age, child, your brain goes, there is no such thing as time. I was there for a while, and I was really lucky to have found an amazing voice teacher by the name of Dr. Robert White. He, again, I was really blessed that he would just kind of take me under his wing and give me lessons for no charge.
Wow.
And he introduced me to Carmela Williams and just filled my mind with just beautiful possibilities.
Okay, and, help me. Who's Carmela Williams?
Opera singer.
Okay.
And she also taught lessons as well. And so he would just open my universe. And strangest thing happened, I don't know how we got back in touch with each other, but we did. He teaches now at Juilliard.
Oh.
And he's like probably close to 80 years old.
Wow.
And he is so amazing and such a young 80 and is so sharp and so necessary. And I recently just had a lesson with him, and it was just beautiful. But yeah, once I left music and art, I went to Queens College, and then I left Queens College. I didn't graduate. It was just difficult for me to stay. My mother had passed away, and I was kind of in flux about where I was living, and money was tight, and that was just insane. So I ended up working in clubs, just sort of finding my way. And so one thing kind of led to the next as far as like doing home demos for people and trying to do actual session work for people. And so my first real recording session was at Atlantic Records. And that's where I met Janice Pendarvis.
Oh, okay.
And Janice is also in the film 20 Feet from Stardom. She's an amazing vocalist, singer, songwriter.
Yes.
Teacher, orator. She's a great speaker. She's got an amazing heart. And so we've known each other a really long time.
Wow.
And we laugh about that session so much because I just remember being so green and so loud and so wrong.
What was who was it with?
It was for a group called Clear with three E's, if I'm not mistaken. And it was a song called You Better Get Tough, Kid. It was a huge hit way back in the day.
Yes.
And I was like, screaming at the top. I was just jubilant and happy in my brain, but you know. And so the producer was Dennis King at the time. He was across the glass, and I could tell, you know, everybody's kind of looking at me like, dang, girl, you kind of loud. But
But he welcomed it, and I just kept going, and we giggle about that session so much. Because, you know, basically, everybody's kind of looking at me kind of cockeyed except for Janice. They were all loving and all beautiful, but Janice was really just such a tender, loving, nurturing soul.
Oh, that is wonderful.
Oh, I love her. I love her so much.
Yeah, I think Luther Vandross had Patty Austin as tender, loving soul.
Oh, how beautiful. Man, I loves me, for, well, needless to say, I love Luther Vandross, but I loves me some Patty Austin.
Yeah.
Because she was like, she was singing all the cool sessions that all background singers dream of being on.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know? And I was listening to a radio station, and they had a clip of her singing, and they were discussing how she was, she had to be somewhere, I know she was like under 10 years old, she's young, really mm-hmm. young, I want to say somewhere like 7 or something like that, mm-hmm. and she was basically telling the orchestra or the band that they were playing in
oh,
the
yes.
wrong key.
Yes, 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 yes. This was when she was at the Apollo, when she was at the Apollo Theater, because I interviewed her, she's actually one of my first interviews,
oh my God.
And she... Oh, I do too. I had to, I was so, that was my green interview. I was laughing so much. I was so silly.
But, oh, I love it. I love that joke.
I was so nervous I was laughing.
Unbelievable.
Patty Austin. Dad was a jazz trombonist uh-huh. for 17 years. He worked with, oh, Lucky Millinder and Fletcher Henderson and mm-hmm. Father Hines and Billy Eckstein
wow.
and Lena Horne and Dinah, which is how I got to meet Dinah, because my dad knew her, and we went to see her perform at the Apollo, and she dared me to go and perform on stage at the Apollo. That's how she got to hear me sing,
mm-hmm.
and I did, because I was 4 and precocious.
Anyone tell you
now I'm 56 and precocious.
Did anyone tell you what you sang?
Did they tell me what I sang?
Not unless you remember.
I sang Teach Me Tonight.
Ooh.
And
you were precocious.
Every 4-year-old.
Oh my gosh!
I told you I was precocious.
Yes.
Damn it! People have to listen when I talk.
Oh my gosh!
It's
going to
be a quiz. Her musical director, who was being very facetious with me, as adults are wont to do when they hang out with kids. So it was like, "So little girl, what do you want to sing?" You know, it was like, "Oh, I want to sing Teach Me Tonight." He said, "Oh," everybody chuckled. And, in the dressing room. He said, oh, what key do you sing it in? And I said, B-flat.
Oh.
And that's exactly, that was the exact reaction. Everybody laughed and then everybody went, ooh. And he said, okay. So we went and we ran the song and we rehearsed it and Dinah called me out on stage. And unfortunately, though, he had the arrangement of the song. He had it in Dinah's key.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that the key had to be changed, but he forgot to tell the band before I came out.
Oh.
And so they started playing it. When I was walking on stage, they were playing the intro to the song mm-hmm. in Dinah's key, and I stopped them
mm-hmm.
and said, you're
oh.
in the wrong key.
Oh, my.
And,
you were precocious. I'll just keep
oh,
that in
please.
Mind. I will not
yeah,
forget.
Yeah, maybe we want to go so far as to say obnoxious, okay? I mean, the kind of kid that, if I met a kid like that now, I'd thrust my body upon them and choke them to the floor. But fortunately, there were no adults around that had that feeling that day.
Right.
So I got to live, and I got to sing.
I love her.
Yeah.
I was just like, you can sing anything for me,
oh,
and
yeah.
I will be a happy soul. Her voice, the timbre of her voice,
mm-hmm.
and just her excellence, her mm-hmm. excellence, and her heart when she sings. Oh, my, it's just all connected for me. I was listening to da-da-dee-da-da. Give me tonight.
Thank you. I was like, this is sounding like a Quincy Jones production. I didn't know
yeah.
what it was yet.
I was like, those background parts, I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
She's my nourishment. She's yes. definitely my melodic and spiritual nourishment musically.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So she had been doing session work, and I think Valerie Simpson was doing it at the time.
Oh,
with the Vandross,
my God.
And it was apparently someone named Maritha Stewart who got Patty to go and do it.
Valerie Simpson, to be in a room with her.
Yeah.
And her voice. We have the actress that's like, you need to go and buy her solo record. And I was just like, okay.
Yeah, that's nice stuff. Mm. I actually have, it was, I think she did a couple, and
mm.
there was a twofer that existed, so
ooh.
I got that.
I love you, a twofer, I love
yes.
it. I got the twofer!
I ain't mad at a twofer. If I can get it, yes, bring it.
Did you do commercials too?
You know, I wanted to. Mm. I think I'd done one for Air France. Oh. And I had to sing Night and Day, You Are the One. Mm. You know, that was the only thing I could remember as far as like commercials. I don't think I did a whole lot of them. Oh. Mainly because, well, a couple of reasons. I was on the road a lot. And you really need to be home for these auditions and when people call you in to try out for these things. And I wasn't really home a lot. And you also have to kind of be well connected with either people who are in charge of hiring for those kind of things. And I just didn't have my stuff together in that way. Yeah, so I was more road girl.
Well, as you are now.
Yes, I love the road. I love me some hotel and room service. Yes, I do. I'm not going to lie. I ain't going to lie. Actually, if I could just kind of blow up my apartment and save a couple of boxes of things and live in a hotel, I would. I might, actually.
Oh, my goodness.
You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl's the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones. Our guest for this evening is Lisa Fisher. What you're listening to right now is Under Me, with background vocals featuring Luther Vandross, Lisa Fisher, and Hillary James. This is from Bob James's Restless, his 1994 Warner Brothers release. Before that, we heard two selections from the 20 Feet from Stardom soundtrack, music from the motion picture, Lean on Me, featuring Darlene Love as the lead, with backing vocals by Lisa Fisher, Joe Lowry, and Judith Hill. We also heard Lisa Fisher, Sure on This Shining Light. Before that, we heard Map to the Treasure, which featured Lisa Fisher on lead vocals, from Billy Child's Map to the Treasure, Reimagining Laura Nero. That's a 2014 Sony Masterwork release. This also won a Grammy. Yay, Billy Child. Before that, we heard Send the Message of Love from Lisa Fisher's release as a solo artist, So Intense, her 1991 Elektra Records release. And we opened our program with our theme from Nina Simone, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl. That's from The Very Best of Nina Simone, Sugar in My Bowl, 1967-1972. This was originally recorded in 1967, and this is a 1998 RCA BMG compilation. Stay tuned for our On the Bandstand segment with our associate producer Hank Williams, and more Lisa Fisher, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl continues.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for February 5th. This segment features era listings of Sugar and My Bowl guests so you can see them live. And this week's show features vocalist Lisa Fisher. You can see her at the Blue Note with Grand Baton from February 14th through 19th, and we have more music listings for you this week. We start with saxophonist Gary Bartz, who's at the Blue Note from the 6th through 7th with pianist McCoy Tyner. Guitarist Mark Rebo is at Sonny's in Red Hook, Brooklyn on the 9th and 23rd. Harpist Brandy Younger is at the CUNY Graduate Center on the 10th and at the Schomburg Center on March 6th for the annual Women in Jazz Festival. Vocalist Dee Dee Bridgewater is at the Met Museum of Art on the 10th. Vocalist Tana Alexa is at Brooklyn's Kingsborough Community College singing Ella Fitzgerald songs on the 10th. Pianist David Videus is at the Jazz Gallery on the 10th and 11th. Vocalist Diane Reeves is at Jazz at Lincoln Center's Rose Theater on the 10th and 11th. Vocalist Catherine Russell leads a sextet at Birdland from February 14th through 18th, and she'll be singing love songs. Blues vocalist Alexis P. Suter is at the Falcon in Marlborough, New York with Ministers of Sound on the 15th and 26th, and she'll be at Darrell's House in Pauling, New York on the 18th. Pianist Harold Mayburn leads a trio in the late set at Small's on the 15th. Pianists Randy Weston and Monty Alexander are at Medgar Evers College's Founders Auditorium in Brooklyn for a spiritual awakening on the 15th, and admission is free. Drummer Andrew Surreal leads a quartet at Jazz at Lincoln Center's Dizzy's Club on the 16th. Bassist Melvin Gibbs and drummer and percussionist Will Calhoun are at Brooklyn's Shapeshifter Lab on the 16th. Trumpeter Marcus Printup is at Jazz at Lincoln Center with the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra on the 17th through 18th, and bassist Melvin Gibbs and drummer J.T. Lewis are both at the Stone with Harriet Tubman on the 18th. J.T. Lewis returns to the Stone with the Phantom Station Ensemble on the 19th. Low brass specialist Joe Daly will be at Terra Blues with Hazmat Modine on the 18th. Bassist Christian McBride is at the National Jazz Museum in Harlem to talk about his recording career for part two of the Session Stories on the 20th and at the Town Hall on the 23rd. Flutist Bobby Humphrey presents Harlem River Drive at Ginny's Supper Club on the 21st for two sets. Saxophonist Ravi Coltrane leads a quartet at the Jazz Standard from the 21st through the 26th. Pianist Vijay Iyer is at the Jazz Gallery as part of Threadgill, Iyer, and Prieto with Henry Threadgill and Daphnis Prieto on the 22nd and 23rd. Finally, it's last call for Azza, the gallery exhibit of drummer and percussionist Will Calhoun's visual art collaboration. That's at the Bronx Music Heritage Center and closes on the 11th. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog, where you'll also find reviews, features, and jazz news. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are also on the website. And Sugar is spelled S-U-G-A. If you're on Twitter and Facebook, look for us there too. We'd appreciate likes, tweets, and shares with your friends. If you like what we do, please help the station stay on the air by pledging whatever you can, and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. See the Support WBAI link on our website for details. This is Hank Williams signing off. With our bi-weekly schedule, we're off the air next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and be back on air on Sunday, February 19th. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on the Bandstand.
Hi, this is Jerry Stiller. You are listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Where are my keys? Anybody see my keys? Who took my keys?
We've talked around it, but your meeting Luther Vandross and working with him, how did that... I know you mentioned it in the film, but let's act like we didn't see the film.
Okay. Because a lot of people have it.
That's
know?
Right.
Yeah. So I met Luther because of an audition. Tuatha Ege, who is like one of the main voices that Luther used, her voice is just so beautiful and so unique and so pristine and so soulful and heartfelt. She was with a group called M2Me.
Yes.
And they had a song out. You remember? Yes.
Oh, yes.
They had a song out called Juicy Fruit.
Yes.
I was like, yes! And so it was this huge hit, and she was singing background for Luther at the time, and so she needed to go and promote that record. And so there was an opening. At the time, I was touring with the Marvelettes, and the same choreographer that was giving us steps was also Luther's choreographer, and he invited me to the audition, and I walked in first, and Luther was behind the piano. I think Brenda White King was there. Philip Ballou was the other background singer. And Alpha Anderson from Chic was also the third singer. And so they were looking to replace Tawatha. And so I come in, and Luther's behind the piano, and he's got this styrofoam containers with some chicken in it. And I was hungry. And
that's why you remember it.
Exactly. Because I'm greedy. It smelled good.
Right.
And I was nervous. And so I'm walking in, and, you know, I don't know nothing from nothing. I'm just like Brooklynese girl, you know. It's summertime, and I have on a black leather skirt and a polyester blue blouse and no stockings and probably no makeup. And I crawl in there. He was really lovely and polite, but very serious, like kind of like a teacher. And so he got behind the piano and asked me to sing a couple of things. And so I think he wanted to see what my range was, and I was doing all the stuff. And he was like, okay. He was taking his inventory. He was okay. And then he said, sing this, sing that. And so it was kind of like a test to see what my retention was for parts. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he took his inventory and did everything. And then he was like, okay, I want you to give this note more air. And I was like, well, this is different. People say sing this, sing that, and do what you want. But no one's really talked about finessing certain things. And so we went through this for about, probably was in there for about a half hour, maybe longer. And towards the end, he says, well, he says, if you can dance, you got this gig. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. This is so cool. And then I started to get really nervous because I knew my dancing was not happening. I was like two left feet. I was just like really uncoordinated. And so luckily, the choreographer knew what my story was. And so he gave me very simple, what do they call it, step touch movement. And so it ended up working out. And I knew that I had to work hard in order to overcome my awkwardness as far as movement. And so he was very giving and very loving, and I just really applied myself. If there was a step and my shoulder needed to be in a particular position, I needed to see the room and know that it was at a particular angle. I had to kind of break it down in a way that made sense for me to be able to do this accurately every single time, no question.
Wow.
You know, so yeah, but meeting him was just, I feel like someone had turned on a huge light in a very dark place.
Wow.
So it was really absolutely a blessing. He was a paternal brother, teacher, friend, just a beautiful soul, beautiful soul, and just always wanted excellence, not only for himself, for us, for his audience. Everything he touched had to be right. It just had to be right.
Hey, Mandela, keep your head up to the sky. Whoa, Mandela, give the world a great big smile. Yeah.
Steve Kroon was a guest on our program. And I,
yes. I owe him a call. Oh, my God.
Okay, then.
Yes. Oh.
And I noticed that, you know, after Luther, you recorded on Steve's release, his debut release as a leader.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
But the thing I was going to ask, though, is being with Luther Vandross, was that like, I don't know how to describe it. I don't want to say compound because that sounds weird. But was there this cohesive lot of you that worked with Luther Vandross for a period of time?
Yes. Once, well, how can I explain this? The amount of nurturing and prepping and purchasing clothes that fit a particular person's body type. Some of those gowns were like $10,000 gowns, $15,000 gowns, hand beaded, made in mind with the neckline of a particular person. No one had the same exact thing. Mm. And so it wasn't like you could easily replace people.
Got it.
You know, and as far as the band is concerned, each of them had such amazing gifts that they brought to the table. It wasn't something that you could easily replace. And so it was a cohesive unit of souls, you know. And so the only time that I think we needed to replace someone was when it was necessary. And I think it just kind of went along in that way. And we traveled as a family. You know, we all were on the same bus and laughing and giggling and, you know, stopping at truck stops and getting grits and, you know, in the middle of the night or, you know, and so it was a beautiful experience because, you know, for me, I was happy to be in a bunk. It was just like, this is so cool. It's like a house that's got a microwave and a TV. Wow! We're just so green. Uh-huh. It's like, this is fantastic, you know. Yeah, I was in heaven. I was in heaven. I was just like, man, you wake up and you're at the next place you need to be. You can get some more sleep. It was just wonderful.
Wow.
I loved it. Yeah. I love mine.
Actually, I love the way you said that. It was like, I could get some more sleep.
You know? Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That was rocking. That was rocking. And we laughed a lot.
Uh-huh.
We laughed a lot. Luther would play these Amos and Andy videos on the bus, and we would giggle and laugh and just have the best time. It was just, yeah, it was a pretty special time.
Now, is that where you learned or developed, sort of going to jump past, because when I saw you in Brooklyn with Grand Baton, I saw you working the sound, trying to get the right sound first off, and then working it once it got to where your ear was pleased or tolerable for your ear.
Oh, my goodness.
So is that where you picked that up with Luther, or is that something that came later?
I think it's a combination of Luther and being in the studio and understanding mic technique.
Okay.
But not really being, it's you kind of learn it just by witnessing and watching. You know, it's not like a course, you know
right.
what I mean? It's not like, okay, here you stand, here you stand.
Right.
Yeah. You kind of, it's more like just living through the experience and going, didn't like how that sounded.
Right. Well,
next time I need to do this. Or, you know, and Luther was really good about letting us know where we needed to stand, who needed to stand where, in conjunction to the mic, and just all that kind of thing. But actually, it's how to sing into the mic is more something that I would learn not only in the studio, but live as well. Because we would all have these cordless mics, and so a lot of the parts would be really sensitive, and so you couldn't belt it out. You know, there was a certain way to approach the mic and sing in conjunction with all the other singers. And so a lot of that is just sort of second nature now. And certain parts, even in a particular line, there would be a swell, and so you would kind of come off the mic just a hair. It's almost like being this, again, a thermometer and just kind of figuring out where you need to be. And so I think a combination of those lessons. Also, when I was younger, I remember being in a club, and I wish I could remember exactly where this was and who the artist was, but I saw a singer, and she wasn't American. I don't know where she came from, but she had two microphones, and one mic had one setting, the other mic had a different setting, and I was so taken with that, and this is probably over 30, 40 years ago. I was just so taken with that, and I never forgot, but then I remembered my first gigs with Grand Baton, and they asked me, what kind of mic do you want to use? And I was just like, oh, I get a Rider. How cool. You know, I get the two mics, and I have no clue what I'm doing. And so I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Let's have a couple of different mics. And so they set up two mics. And in that moment, I realized, I was like, oh, I remember that woman that had two mics. I was like, you know what? This might be a good opportunity to start playing with the idea of using two mics within the show.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, actually. So what is happening? What is the difference between the two mics? Do you want to share? Is it a trade secret or?
Oh, no. Okay. It's so simple. Oh. Actually, they're both set with reverb.
Okay.
And one has delay. Okay. And so the main mic that I use for most of the night is my go-to mic. The secondary mic, which is usually to my left, is sort of my afterthought or my background part or my alter ego. I just sort of use it in ways to color the experience for me emotionally. Yeah, and so I never know how I'm going to use it as each song progresses. It really is sort of like this free painting easel. And so I sort of use it in that way, and it's just been so much fun for me.
You know, it's so funny that you mentioned painting and easel. I have written here as part of a question. It's like, it appeared to me as though you had pulled out a deluxe crayon box of musical colors.
I love you so much right now.
So that was to lead up to a question of could you share some of the colors in your box? Can they be verbalized?
Well, how can I explain this? And it's almost on the tip of my tongue. The consonants and vowels and sound that create a word that we can understand is one facet. Then there's the other side that we can't really touch in that way. Mm-hmm. It's that same thing like when you walk into a room and folks are kind of looking at you and you believe that you can hear their thoughts. Mm-hmm. I believe that some of that is really true. We hear our own thoughts. Sometimes our own thoughts get muddled in some of the information that we think we're receiving from other people. But if your thoughts are kind of at peace, I believe that you can really sort of hear other people's sense other people's feelings or comfort or discomfort or emotions, their joy. They don't have to say a word. Mm-hmm. It's an energy that beams from you from somewhere in the air, and you can, it's there. It's real. You can feel it.
Right.
And so I think in that way, the colors that you talk about, they translate in an invisible sort of life force of its own, you know, that we're not accustomed to having to look at all the time because we're busy. We're busy trying to survive. We're busy trying to live life. But I think when we come into a concert setting, something else happens. We're looking to draw in something and take something away with us. And so it feels like a circle for me. It's like I usually am so freaked out and I'm so worried about everything just being okay. And it's like, am I doing okay? Is everything good? Am I doing the right thing? Is this the right moment for this? Is it, you know, you want everything to be good. Mm-hmm. And so there's this circle of energy that's always like going around the room for me. I feel like I'm going to release my fear. I'm just going to breathe it out, release my fear, and just kind of focus on the reason as to why we're all here.
Yippee! I guess it would be easier to access that if you release the fear and all. So,
yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
So the concept of jazz standards by particular composers and all that, Cole Porter and et cetera, et cetera. Have you messed around with those or considered throwing them into your books?
You know, I have, but it's interesting. I kind of feel like, so everything has a flavor and a spice. And so I think of things in food metaphors because it's yummy and it's fun. And when I think of a jazzy kind of spice to an existing melody or piece, that's kind of like my sprinklings of, or my version of sprinklings of things, or it can be more of a classical sprinkling or a popular music sprinkling or a rhythm and blues or, you know, just all these different colors. And so recently I've been asked to be a part of a Sarah Vaughan tribute.
had happened last year, and Christian McBride was kind enough to invite me. And it was just a beautiful experience in so many ways. But listening to Sarah's voice and just learning these songs to me was just like these spiritual kind of breadcrumbs in my path. You know, mm-hmm. I got to choose these songs and listen, and I was just thinking, I was like, you know what? It's a scary thing to try to reinterpret someone like Sarah. The only thing you can do is just do your best to be yourself and really go inside the melody of what's there. And so, you know, I was thinking about maybe I could do a couple of more jazz standards, but just do it our way.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. So, yeah, we're definitely thinking about doing more of that kind of thing.
So speaking of doing things your way, and we talked about this after the show, as a matter of fact, you're revisiting How Can I Ease the Pain, mm-hmm. and how your visitation, it's like this is now your song. I mean, I know you wrote the song, mm-hmm. but it's mm-hmm. as though you owned it for yourself, as opposed to, you know, what was wow. promoted. Mm-hmm. So do you want to tell us about that journey of that
mm-hmm.
song?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was really lucky. I got signed to Elektra. Bob Krasnow was the president at the time. And so Carol Childs was A&R woman who was just amazing and got in touch with Narda Michael Walden, who produced and co-wrote the song. That whole experience was one of those kind of things where if I had not listened to my inner voice, I don't know if that song would have happened. Elektra had done a survey of up-tempo songs versus ballads. Mm-hmm. And so at the time, they really wanted us to do an up-tempo song.
Right.
And Narda and I were in there just, you know, I was trying to be a good little artist and go in there and try to... I'm not a writer in the classic sense of a writer, but I express and I try to create. So I'm in there and I'm, you know, beating my head in and I'm just like, I don't know, no feeling this up-tempo thing. And I was like, just play me something. And he played this How Can I Ease the Pain chorus thing. He was like, He's a pain, dun, 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 dun. And that's all he had, mm-hmm. right? And so I was like, ooh, what's that? I want to write that. And he's like, well, you know, we're supposed to be writing up tempo song. I was like, I know, I know. I was like, we'll get to that, but I want to work on that, mm-hmm. you know? And so long story short, we ended up writing it, doing it, and it was the one piece for me that was just, I felt so attached to on so many levels. Mm-hmm. And it also became, you know, as you get older, you're not the same person. You're right. not who you were when you were, you know, 23, 33. And so I don't sound exactly the same as I did back then. And so my fear was is that everyone's going to hate me. I'm not 33. You know what I mean?
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, never did I think, like, you might actually be okay. Okay, just being yourself in this moment, you might actually survive just being yourself. And so when the film came out and I got these opportunities to actually do a show, my manager, Linda Goldstein, who mm-hmm. also manages Bobby McFerrin, who mm-hmm. I have so much love and respect for.
Whom you've also recorded with.
Yes, yes. We did Vocabularies, which is one of my favorite
and
things
spiritual.
In the world.
Yes,
and Spiritual. Yes, yes, yes. Oh, my gosh. You're good.
Homework.
God bless you. So she was really instrumental in just coaxing me out of the echo in my brain and just sort of pulling out some of that negative self-talk mm-hmm. and replacing it with just play. Just go in and just have fun. Have fun. And the whole concept of that to me felt so, I was like, oh, wow, really? I can do that? It's okay to be 50 and change and have some fun? Really?
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, my first shows were really, was like a rebirth for me because I had to sort of rebirth myself at this age and just love and accept myself at this time. You know, that's a constant walk. But I'm loving the stroll. I'm loving the stroll.
And to be in this business at the same time is...
It seems
to make it doubly hard.
Oh, it is so difficult. I mean, you know, how many times have I sat home after tour? You know, because, you know, you get paid on the days that you work,
right.
pretty much, you
right.
know, unless you really get lucky and you have salary for a certain amount of time. And in some cases, that has been true. But there are times or years or months and months and months when I don't work. And so you're sitting there. I'm sitting there at 30. I'm sitting there at 40. Mm. I'm sitting there at 50. And my body is changing.
Right.
And I'm trying to love and accept myself and let go of the weight mm-hmm. of not being who I was, who I used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And really just trying to mother myself. In a world where you feel that people applaud you when they really do feel like they're saying something beautiful. You haven't changed a bit, you know. And kind of in a way, I know their heart. I do uh-huh. know their heart. But a lot of times the weight of that vision is a really heavy thing for me to bear. And so I know I changed and that change is a natural
thing, and it's the ticking of the clock, and it's a beautiful gift that we get. And so I just had to kind of sort of change my own attitudes. It's not even so much what people would say to me.
Right.
I had to change my roots and my foundation of what I think of myself.
So when people come to the Blue Note, we will get a chance to see and hear share How Can I Use the Pain?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, the one thing that I didn't think about is the life experiences that I didn't have at 33.
Mm-hmm.
And so when one thing is not there, it gets replaced with something else.
Right.
And I just hadn't thought of it in that way.
Your musical sound is like the UN. Which is really cool. I mean,
I've never heard that before.
It's like, in literally, like the UN, because I noticed you did a recording with Afra Haza.
In my promised land, in the Middle East, what
Oh my gosh. Yes. I loved her. Loved her.
Yeah, and for those who aren't aware, Afrahaza is the sampled voice that you hear with Eric B. and Rakim.
Mm-hmm. I think the first thing I ever heard from her was something called In Ninalu or something like that. Anyway, so I'm sorry, I digress. Go ahead.
No. What did it do for you, having heard that one?
I was like, who is this mixing like this world sound on top of this dance thing? I'm so grooving on this. It was great. It just kind of opened my eyes a whole lot. I just enjoyed her. It was nourishment, yeah. That nourishment again, you know.
Another example, Yo-Yo Ma and the Silk Road Ensemble. Because it was technically a duet, but it still sounded as though you were singing backing vocals.
You know,
Gregory
it's really
Porter.
Interesting you say that, because when I look at Gregory Porter, I'm just like, I just want to hear him sing,
right.
You know? And he is so rooted in who he is. You know, it was an early morning. Probably nobody got much sleep. And I crawled into the studio, but I was just so full of energy and just so happy to be in the room. And it was important for me to listen to what he was doing and react. And so that's kind of how I looked at that experience for me. What he offers is just so gorgeous. And I feel like I'm still trying to figure myself out. And I've been singing background for so long that I kind of did look at that session. It's like, I'm here, but I'm supporting you guys. I'm supporting this project. I'm the support girl. I love supporting people. It just gives me such joy.
Right.
And I think probably once I get more settled within myself, it'll balance itself out in a way that makes more sense, where I can sort of feel rooted and still be supported and supportive as well.
Well, I noticed on a recording with George Benson, you have vocal arranger credits.
Oh.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. You're listening to Sugar in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones. Our guest for this evening is vocalist, composer, and arranger, Lisa Fisher. Lisa Fisher's group, Grand Baton, will be at the Blue Note from February 14th through the 19th. What you're listening to right now is Stairway to Love from George Benson's Irreplaceable. That's a 2004 Verve Records release. Before that, we heard Heart and Soul, which is a duet between Lisa Fisher and Gregory Porter. Yo-Yo Ma with the Silk Road Ensemble. Sing Me Home is the name of that release. This is a 2016 Sony Masterworks release. Before that, we heard Middle East from Afrahaza. Desert Wind was the name of that release. This is a 1989 Sire Records recording. Before that, we heard How Can I Ease the Pain? This was extracted from a YouTube video, since Lisa Fisher and Grand Baton are in the works of creating something you can listen to that's not on YouTube. That's from a March 2016 performance at the Dakota Jazz Club in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Before that, we heard Mandela Smiles from Steve Groon, a former Sugar guest. That's from his debut release as a leader, In My Path, En Mi Camino, from 2010 Croonatune Records. Before that, we heard Stop to Love from Luther Vandross's Give Me the Reason, his 1986 release on Epic Records. Stay tuned for more Lisa Fisher right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
You wrapped me in your arms and took me on a stairway to love.
Really?
Yeah.
No. Oh, my God.
Oh, goodness. On Irreplaceable, as a matter of fact. That's the release. And
oh, my goodness. Oh, with Joshua.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Oh, he's such a sweetheart. Oh, I just love him. I can't, you know, I didn't even, I'm horrible with, like, reading stuff and, you know, like, looking on the back of records. I do the session, and I run off, and I'm gone. I'm out of town. I'm in, you know.
Well, I was actually going
to
ask
you. Know.
I was actually going to ask you about that. As far as sessions, is it like you're a journey person? You just go in, do it, it's like, okay, done, next thing. I guess it just depends on the session. I don't know.
When I go into a session, it is such a present moment for me. It is like it's the last thing I'm going to do in my life. It is the most important thing I'm doing in this moment. And I'm going to do my absolute best, because whatever we're doing, it's forever. This is forever. This is no joke. And so I'm really trying my best to listen to everyone's desires, because they've been living with this music way more than I have. And they're kind of guiding me as to how to make their vision come alive orally. So I'm a sponge. I'm a painter. I'm a voice. I'm a feeling, I'm a presence, I'm just all these crazy characters in my head, and the music is the most important thing that we share.
The Stones, I guess that's your 9-to-5? I mean, that's your day job of sorts?
It was the amount of time that I sang with Luther Vandross was almost around the same amount of years.
that I've sung background for the Stones, which has been about 25 years. It would just so happen that whenever Luther was out, because I was with Luther first, whenever Luther was off, the Stones would go out.
Mm.
And whenever the Stones were done, then Luther would go out.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
So for years, I was like, thank you, Lord. It happened like this for years. And then one year, Luther had a tour at the same time that the Stones had a tour. And I had to make a really, really difficult decision. So I called Luther and said, I don't want to go. It's like, if you need me, because I knew the amount of money. I mean, I didn't know to the dollar. Mm-hmm. I knew that he invested a lot, not only in me, but in his stage production.
Right.
Years and years and years of costumes and just all this stuff. And I just like, I can't do it. And I talked to him about it, and he said, you go ahead and do that. We're going to be okay.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. He allowed my heart to be light about it. And so
yeah.
I went on and continued on with the Stones. And then same sort of difficult decision again with the Stones, where the film was out and I was getting these gigs and I had to cancel. We had book gigs under Lisa Fish and Grand Baton, but then the Stones schedule would change. But such a huge city, and it was a really hard decision. I just said, you know what? I think now is the time where I have to really focus on whatever this is that I'm supposed to be doing, whatever gift that I've been given in this time. I need to focus on this and not waste this moment.
Yeah.
So it was a hard decision. I mean, it's like two big families that I had to make a decision about. So.
And on that note, though, at the Blue Note, February 14th through the 19th, Tuesday through Sunday, Lisa Fisher and Grand Baton will be available for you to enjoy.
You are amazing, Joyce. You really, really are. I love how you make me feel at home to be me. So thank you for that. And just everything that you've said, and just all your heart, and just you rock.
Well, thank you, Lisa Fisher. You definitely rock. I mean, literally rock. R-A-W-K, all caps, and 5 exclamation points. And I'd like to also thank Linda Goldstein and Martha Redbone for introducing us.
Oh, my God, I love you so much.
Yes.
Oh, I'm going to call her and kiss her via phone.
Yay.
Oh, thank you so much,
Thank you. Well, thank you so much, Lisa Fisher. And I will see you in February.
Excellent. Please let me know when you come in so I can give you a hug.
Excellent. All right.
Oh, darling. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, darling.
You're listening to the closing moments of Sugar in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones. Our guest for this evening is Lisa Fisher, who will be at the Blue Note from February 14th through the 19th. And you can go to our blog, sugarinmybowl.org, and check for more information. What you're listening to right now is Gimme Shelter from the Rolling Stones. This is from the Live Licks release, 2004 EMI recording. And we'll be back on February 19th. The WBAI Winter Fun Drive starts, so we'll be in the midst of a drive when we return on February 19th. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
Rhino, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.